Topic number two. During the past several months, I've been trying to call attention to a major new trend in current world events. The world is splintering, splitting up into factions which are all squabbling with one another. The whole world is becoming like the Balkans before World War I, a cauldron of crises, seething and bubbling hotter and hotter. We are beginning to see not just one crisis at a time, but several crises all at once. In AUDIO LETTER 63, I gave a warning to watch for this trend to speed up. Our world is being divided and balkanized deliberately by the Bolsheviks who now control the United States government. In 1914, World War I erupted suddenly, seemingly by accident, out of the unstable ferment of crises in the Balkans. Likewise, Nuclear War I is intended to erupt soon out of the spreading chaos of worldwide crises. My friends, World War I was not accidental. It was only made to appear that way. Likewise, Nuclear War I will not be accidental, but we are being conditioned to think it is accidental when it happens. Most Americans today, when we think about global war, think about World War II, not World War I. We tend to think about the repeated appeasement of Hitler during the 30s by Britain and France, and we recall that it all ended in the most destructive war in history, World War II. The so-called Reagan administration has taken advantage of these costly historical memories by saying, in effect, no more appeasement. Hearing that, millions of Americans cheer in agreement. Meanwhile, under the guise of non-appeasement, the United States is actually pursuing a policy of confrontation. We are told with a Hollywood smile that we must act tough to keep the peace. Then we go beyond that, acting not just tough but belligerent in ways designed to move us toward war. Long ago, President Teddy Roosevelt said, "Walk softly, but carry a big stick." Instead, the alleged Reagan administration is swaggering like a bully with nothing but a chip on its shoulder. The Reagan-style government rhetoric is slanted toward our memories of World War II. As a result, most Americans are prevented from thinking about the more important lessons of World War I. But the balkanization of our world today is not lost on everyone. There are beginning to be worried establishment voices talking about it. An example was a recent article in that old establishment publication, Foreign Affairs. In this article, the author expressed worry over the United States' attitude these days of not even talking to the Russians. It says this leaves us, quote, "in a situation where the risk of war is higher because of the danger of miscalculation by each side. You could stumble into war, almost like 1914. The Reagan administration motto is Munich. I think that's wrong. The correct motto is 1914." Unquote. My friends, that's exactly what I reported several months ago in AUDIO LETTER 63, except for one thing. The environment for miscalculation is not accidental, but deliberate. It's an old Bolshevik axiom that in chaos there's opportunity. Others too are breaking with past behavior to express unprecedented concern. For example, Harvard economist John Kenneth Galbraith spoke recently in commencement ceremonies at Johns Hopkins University. As reported in the Washington Star for May 30, 1981, Galbraith lashed out at, quote, "those who say that we have to accept the risk of nuclear war to protect our democratic system," unquote. Galbraith said that to do that is to risk destruction of that very system. He pointed out that the highly sophisticated and deeply integrated modern economic system cannot survive the shock of a nuclear exchange. Another example of those now worrying in public is New York Times columnist James Reston. In his column, Dateline June 23, 1981, Reston discussed what he called the administration's misconduct of foreign policy. He pointed out that American government officials seem to be going in all directions at once, yet all in the general direction of confrontation with Russia. And he says, quote, "The troubling thing about all this is that nobody really knows what it means," unquote. He expresses puzzlement over the administration's public confirmation of intelligence arrangements with Red China, which can only serve to provoke Russia. Finally, he concludes, quote, "This is becoming a danger to the administration, and if it keeps on goading the Soviet bear, even a threat to the peace," unquote. My friends, why have these and so many other voices trusted by the public been so silent until so late in the game? Where were they 5 and 6 years ago? When my audio letter reports were documenting the secret Rockefeller-Soviet alliance and its collapse, why did they speak only of détente? The answer in some cases, my friends, is that half a decade ago, America's ruling circles were still in bed with the Soviet Union. The Rockefeller cartel thought it controlled Russia through the Bolshevik rulers of Russia. Today, everything has changed. The Bolsheviks have been overthrown at the highest levels of power in Russia. Flocking here to the United States for a new start, the Bolsheviks in turn have wrestled power away from the Rockefeller cartel. In the so-called national election last November 1980, the crumbling Rockefeller oil cartel made a desperate bid to retake control of the United States government. In Audio Letter 59 last October, I reported that the cartel had regrouped under the direction of John J. McCloy. Using the figurehead known as Ronald Reagan, Big Oil tried to oust the Bolsheviks. They wanted to get America back onto the track of their own corporate socialist dictatorship. The McCloy-dominated forces of Big Oil did succeed in their great surprise landslide in the election itself. But the actual transfer of governmental power was another matter. In Audio Letter 61 last January, I reported that the obscure Bronte decision of the Supreme Court would stand in the way. Sure enough, to this day, large numbers of critical government positions are still unfilled or staffed by Bolshevik holdovers. The McCloy Group are getting their way in some areas, but not in foreign policy. America's foreign policy is still under total Bolshevik control. These are the facts, my friends, behind the unusual expressions of alarm by those normally silent establishment voices. I have been told confidentially by extremely well-informed sources that the so-called Reagan administration has jumped the tracks. It's out of their control, and now none other than John J. McCloy himself has been quoted publicly in exactly these same terms. Earlier I quoted from James Reston's New York Times column of June 23rd. The most significant statement in the entire column was the following, and I quote, "John J. McCloy, former head of the World Bank and former United States High Commissioner in Berlin, was down here this week saying what he thought, as usual, about the conduct of American foreign policy. Mr. McCloy thinks that an administration whose success he favors has gone off the track." Unquote. McCloy and his fellow members of the Rockefeller establishment have no love for the independent-minded Russians who now control the Kremlin. But unlike the Bolsheviks here, they do think it is to our advantage to at least keep talking. Recently, a faithful listener of mine, who is concerned about the need for arms control, wrote an influential American industrialist, who is also a former ambassador to Russia. He wrote back that it would be dangerous and unwise to simply trust the Russians in whatever they say, except, quote, "if what is to be trusted is carefully written out and agreed upon mutually, then I think one can trust them to observe the agreement," unquote. I might mention that this agrees with my own personal experience during my years with the United States Export-Import Bank, The Russians and their Warsaw Pact partners are always hard bargainers. They do not regard you as sincere or to be taken seriously unless you will bargain hard and long. But once an agreement is reached, they always observe it scrupulously. The problem is, to bargain with the Russians, you have to know what you want. If you want to genuinely control nuclear arms, you will have to bargain toward that objective. And genuine arms control is the last thing that would occur to America's present Bolshevik-dominated government. On June 22, the President's nominee to head the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency practically said as much. In Senate testimony, Eugene V. Rostow said, quote, "It may be that a brilliant light will strike our officials, but I don't know anyone who knows what it is yet that we want to negotiate about," unquote. In the same testimony, Rostow also said that the United States will not be ready to start strategic weapons talks with Russia until March 1982. He lumped in not only the SALT talks, but also the issue of nuclear missiles in Europe. On June 29, 1981, the entity President Brezhnev said, quote, "We are ready to sit down at the negotiating table on that issue even tomorrow, if you like, but talks have not begun yet because of the United States' attitude," unquote. The Russians have also said that they would halt deployment of their European theater nuclear weapons during the talks if America would do the same. However, this is not a precondition to talks, contrary to some reports in the United States. When Eugene Rostow mentioned that the United States needs 9 more months to get ready for arms negotiations, it was a slip of the tongue. Later, he had to recant about it to the astonished senators on the Foreign Relations Committee, saying he would not delay SALT negotiations. The 9-month preparation time stated by Rostow has nothing to do with any coming arms control initiatives. After all, Rostow himself said no one even has any arms control ideas to talk about. Instead, Rostow was referring accidentally to the nuclear war preparations now underway. Bolshevik military planners here now expect that by March 1982, essential nuclear first strike preparations will be completed in the United States. At that point, with the weapons already in place, we can pretend to talk. But as we talk, we will also be setting in motion the events which are to lead to nuclear war I. The 9-month interval mentioned by Eugene Rostow is based primarily on 2 military programs. One is the Space Shuttle program. The other is America's secret mobile missile program, which is going on under the cover of the bogus MX project. I reported on the basic outlines of both of these programs in the past, so I will simply update those reports now. First, about the Space Shuttle program. Last month I reported that NASA plans to intentionally abort the upcoming shuttle launch in September. The shuttle presently at Cape Canaveral is not the Columbia, which was destroyed in the unsuccessful mission last April. I gave the details about that and the television hoax to hide the disaster in AUDIO LETTER 64. The shuttle which we will see lifting off from Cape Canaveral this fall will be the Training Shuttle Enterprise, although of course it has been relabeled Columbia. The Enterprise is the same shuttle that we saw landing in California after the real Columbia had already been destroyed. The flight this fall is intended to keep up appearances while the secret military shuttle team figure out how to get past the Russians into orbit. One way or another, they believe that a successful shuttle flight will be able to provide essential reconnaissance over Russia by the spring of 1982. The other major factor is the Minuteman TX mobile missile deployment. I first reported on this secret program just over a year ago in AUDIO LETTER 55. In AUDIO LETTER 60 last November, I gave an important update concerning the anti-cosmosphere missiles which are being deployed along with TX missiles. I can now report that these anti-cosmosphere missiles, or ACMs, are becoming an essential key to the Bolshevik war plan. It is by means of the ACMs that the Bolsheviks plan to set off what will seem to be accidental nuclear war. To review for a moment, my friends, the Minuteman TX is a completely secret mobile missile program. For public consumption, the Pentagon is pretending to be concentrating on something called the MX. The MX, we're told, will be big and powerful, each carrying 10 nuclear warheads. And to hide it from the Russians, we're told that it will be mobile. Over the years, one basing scheme after another has been talked about for the MX. About 6 weeks ago, on May 27, Henry Bradshaw of the Washington Star listed some of the MX basing systems that have been proposed. Quote, orbital basing, shallow underwater submarine basing, floating missiles in the ocean, attaching them to the ocean bottom, mounting them on inland waterway barges and on ocean-going ships, aerial launching from special seaplanes, special land-based planes, new short airfield planes, new vertical takeoff planes and dirigibles, putting thousands of smaller missiles in fixed silos, moving only the warhead and guidance systems among multiple missile fuel bodies, unquote. My friends, work is going on to develop a larger ICBM under the MX program, but that work is being used as a decoy and to provide a funding channel for America's real mobile missile, the Minuteman TX. The Pentagon wants to make sure that everyone focuses their attention on the MX decoy program. The best way to get people's attention, you know, is to make them angry. So that's what the Pentagon has done. The Air Force is pretending to fight tooth and nail for a patently ridiculous basing system, the infamous racetracks in Utah and Nevada. And sure enough, people are up in arms over the MX. Farmers, ranchers, environmentalists, anti-nuclear activists, you name it. The MX decoy system is drawing all the fire like the lightning rod it is meant to be. Thanks to the orchestrated MX controversy, our real mobile missile, the Minuteman TX, is being completely overlooked. Unlike the giant MX, the TX is relatively small. It's being deployed in the one way which should be most obvious of all. It is the one way never mentioned in connection with the MX, because the Pentagon does not want us to think of it. The Minuteman TX missiles are being deployed on America's railroads. They are moved around constantly, often right under our very noses. In AUDIO LETTER 55, I gave a description of the unique railroad cars which house the TX missiles. Months later, some of my listeners began sending me photographs of them, and several months ago I released a special bulletin containing these photographs. In AUDIO LETTER 60, I described the ACM missiles which are beginning to accompany the TX missiles as they are shuttled around. The ACM is basically like an ABM missile, built to take off with blinding speed. Each is armed with a cobalt ionization bomb. When they explode at the upper fringes of the atmosphere, the Bolsheviks here believe they will interfere temporarily with any Russian cosmospheres hovering overhead. Before the cosmospheres can recover, the TX missiles will be launched at Russia in a nuclear first strike. In AUDIO LETTER 55, I explained that the nerve-wracking false nuclear alerts by NORAD were actually deliberate tests by Bolshevik agents. They want to make sure that they can bring about a supposedly accidental first strike against Russia that cannot be countermanded in Washington. Early this year of 1981, the Bolsheviks here concluded that the best way to do this is to shift the United States onto a launch-on-warning stance. Up until recently, the United States nuclear forces have required a positive order from the President before launching a nuclear attack. In theory, that's still true, but in practice, it's being changed quietly. Our strategic forces are being reprogrammed to launch an all-out attack on Russia under either of two conditions. The basic instruction is to await a positive command from Washington, but a super-secret new instruction tells nuclear forces they need not wait for a positive launch order under one extraordinary condition. This extraordinary condition is defined as, quote, widespread loss of C3 connectivity due to EMP, unquote. EMP stands for electromagnetic pulse, a phenomenon associated with nuclear blasts at the fringes of the atmosphere or near space. In the early 1960s, it was discovered by nuclear testing that EMP can overload and disable all kinds of electrical equipment, even power lines. It is known that today EMP would virtually wipe out the command, control, and communication system of the United States, called C3 by the Pentagon. The Bolshevik military planners here are turning this vulnerability to their own advantage. Through the appropriate avenues, they are arguing, suppose the Soviet Union preceded an attack on the United States by using EMP to wipe out our communications. They could set off a single H-bomb 250 miles over Omaha, Nebraska. All of our communications from Maine to California, plus parts of Canada and Mexico, would be fried by EMP. Afterward, the President would have no way to get word to our ICBM crews, bomber crews, or submarines to retaliate. The Russians could hit us, say the Bolsheviks, and we would not hit back. Using this argument as an excuse, Bolshevik military planners here are disseminating new secret orders to our nuclear forces. These orders say that should there be an EMP episode that cuts off communications, that is to be taken as proof in itself, per se, that we are under nuclear attack. Under the new launch on warning posture of our armed forces, they will not wait for any further orders. Obeying the secret new standing orders, all of our ICBMs, bombers, and missile submarines will launch all-out retaliation on Russia. That is, they will believe they are retaliating. But what they will actually be doing is mounting a nuclear first strike against Russia. When the Bolsheviks here are ready for it to happen, they will launch the anti-cosmosphere missiles which now accompany the mobile Minuteman TX missiles. The ACMs will race to the fringes of space over America and explode their cobalt ionization bombs. When that happens, it will do more than just interfere with the cosmospheres. It will also create a violent EMP episode. All communications to centralized authority will be cut off, and our nuclear forces will believe it is due to a Russian attack. There will be no time and no way to double-check, and so United States forces will attack Russia. The Bolsheviks here will have set off nuclear war I, and they will make it look as if it all happened by accident. Topic number 3. 1 year ago this month, I began responding to a question I was being asked at that time by many people. The question was, what can I do? I did so reluctantly for the reasons I gave at the time, and yet I also did so hopefully. I felt that if that many people really wanted to take action, there might really be a chance. I explained why, in my opinion, there was only one weapon that could possibly save America from our headlong plunge toward nuclear war. That weapon is the truth. In particular, it is the truth about the covered-up Fort Knox gold scandal that could stop our internal enemies in their tracks. I started giving suggestions month by month for what you could do. We began with Senator William Proxmire, then Chairman of the Senate Banking Committee. Later on, we directed our efforts and attention to the privately owned Federal Reserve System, which holds legal title to America's missing gold. Finally, we gave the entity President Reagan the chance to do his duty to look into the matter. I believe the time has come to give you an honest accounting of where we stand. My friends, we have given every possible opportunity to those who have the appropriate authority and responsibility to investigate honestly. And what have they done? Has a single official of the United States government, or of the Federal Reserve Corporation, or of Congress taken the people's side? No. Without exception, they have all come down on the side of keeping the lid on the facts about our missing gold. Without exception, they're saying in effect that they don't care about the destruction of our hard-earned dollars in our economy. They don't care that you cannot make ends meet. They do not care that America's economic collapse is paving the way for dictatorship and war. They care only about keeping themselves on what they believe will be the winning side. And they have proven by their actions that they believe those who stole our gold will be the winning side. Senator William Proxmire, aided by the so-called Inspector General of the Treasury Department, steadfastly refused to investigate. The Federal Reserve Corporation has also closed ranks to keep out the light of truth. For a while, a few months ago, certain high officials of the regional Federal Reserve banks were being surprisingly cooperative. Now all that has been put to a stop. Several officials have resigned. All the rest have gone silent as stone. On June 22, 1981, my friend Mr. Edward Durrell sent a certified letter to every single Federal Reserve System director in the United States. In that letter, he warned each director of his or her individual legal responsibility relative to the nation's missing gold reserves. Based on various legal precedents, each one is legally liable if any of the gold is missing, and yet not a single one has dared to break through the wall of silence which has now been imposed. And then there's the President. The entity known as Ronald Reagan gives beautiful lip service to the idea that any governmental abuses should be rooted out. So 3 months ago, I invited you to send mailgrams to him, urging him or his representatives to look into the gold scandal. For starters, we urged him to investigate the discrepancy of 165 million ounces between different statements of the Treasury itself on our gold supplies. My friends, I have never heard one peep out of the White House in reply, and so far as I know, no one who sent a mailgram even had it acknowledged. My friends, there can be no more appeals to authority except to the authority of our Lord Jesus Christ, who is above all. Time is running out. By this time next year, nuclear war one could be upon us. So I urge those of you who still want to take action to do it right where you are. Use your files of correspondence to share what you have learned with others, if they are interested. Let the power of the truth do its work, in spite of the corruption in high places. And let your own knowledge of the truth about current events help you decide wisely in taking care of your own family needs. Now it's time for my last-minute summary. My friends, time is fast running out for the United States of America. Timetables can never be firm, but the Bolsheviks here are now shooting for around mid-1982 to set off nuclear war one. Even now, a great naval disaster has befallen the United States because of their maneuverings. My friends, a day of judgment is coming soon for America. Americans by the millions are going along with the satanic ideas of the Bolsheviks here. We are filling up a cup of wrath for ourselves, and soon we will drink it. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you. And may God bless each and every one of you.